Welcome back to Coastal Connection. I'm Brian Russo. Coming up in just a bit, we'll talk with Ocean City Councilman Dennis Dare about his new appointment to a state committee that will be researching and planning for the long-term effects of global climate change, and particularly sea level rise. But first, you may not have heard the word sequestration a few weeks ago, but by now you've probably heard more than enough of it. Like it or not, the $85 billion across-the-board cuts are here, and now it's just a waiting game to see if things are going to be as grim as the politicians and perhaps the economists warned us it might be. But what will the sequester mean for folks here on the coast? And when will we start feeling those effects? Perhaps more importantly, how much will it sting? So joining me to talk about this is Dr. Memo Dieriker. He's a founding director of the Business, Economic, and Community Outreach Network at Salisbury University, or Beacon, as it's commonly known. Memo, welcome back to the program.
It is my pleasure to be here.
First things first, is sequestration going to be felt here on the coast, and if so, when?
Well, the correct answer to that has to be yes and no, because it will depend on whether you are one of the individuals who are directly being impacted or indirectly impacted. Most of us who are going to be indirectly impacted might not even feel it happening, or if we do, it will be in passing. Unfortunately, it will also impact certain individuals and certain households very directly, and they will feel it fairly significantly, maybe not right away, but over the course of the year and into the future.
Looking back at the recession several years ago, you know, this region always lags behind the metropolitan regions about when we start feeling the effects. I remember the housing market crashed and the recession hit, and there was this sense of, well, when's it coming here? And then it, you know, hit us kind of right on the chin. So I guess with that being said, same thing, when are we going to start feeling sequestration and who's going to feel it the most? What programs, what initiatives specific to our region are likely to be cut?
Well, half of the impact is going to be on defense. And with the exception of what's happening down at the Wallace Flight Facility, we do not have that much dependence on the defense side of things. So that part is not going to hit us anytime soon. The other non-defense discretionary spending that is being cut, we will feel that if we have children at school, if we have elderly family members who are depending on certain services. But again, because this is an over time kind of thing, and because, as you mentioned earlier, Maryland is the eastern shore of Maryland is slightly lagging economically behind the rest of Maryland, it will take a while getting here. With the last recession, because it was so dependent on real estate and because real estate was such a big component of the beach resorts, we felt it pretty quickly, and that was a kind of an aberration. Normally, we feel these things anywhere from 3 to 6 months after the rest of Maryland does. This time, it might even take longer than that.
You know, given that sequestration is likely to hit people in the Washington-Baltimore corridor pretty hard, you know, do you think that just where we are on the calendar, you know, leading up to that summer season where most of the tourists are coming across the bridge from Washington, from Baltimore, do you think that's going to have an impact here locally in Ocean City and up and down the coast with tourism?
Absolutely. Absolutely, yes. And it's going to have two kinds of impact. One is going to be the actual impact of the individuals who might be faced with furloughs, or other agency cuts. The second part probably is even worse. It's the psychological impact of people who are seeing friends and neighbors being impacted and cutting back on either their discretionary spending or the magnitude of their discretionary spending. That means they might not come. It means if they come, they are much more careful with their spending and deal with needs rather than wants. Bottom line, it is an important part of our regional economy, the government spending and related economic activity. Anytime that is curtailed, people become both actually and psychologically impacted. And we see the ripple effects here. Just as we were getting out of the funk, just as Ocean City and other beach resorts were saying, finally, we turned the corner, this is not going to be good news. Hopefully, we have other aces up the sleeve to be able to deal with it. But you're absolutely right. It will have an impact.
Who do you think is going to feel the largest effects. I've seen reports about, you know, big cuts to schools. So that could be the younger demographic and you know, younger families that are feeling the impacts of sequestration. I've also seen other statistics that point to the elderly taking a large hit, specifically people that are getting meals brought to their homes. I guess across the board, demographic-wise, age-wise, who's feeling the biggest sting from sequestration?
The biggest thing is going to be obviously specific employees who get furloughed, specific defense contractors whose companies are becoming very careful. But you're absolutely right. At the two edges of our age demographics, we're going to have fairly significant impacts. Even though the original intent was to protect our less fortunate citizens, de facto, this is what's going to happen. Anybody who reads what's going to happen sees very clearly that the youngest and the oldest are going to be affected, even though we've tried to protect them. The good news, if there's any good news, or the silver lining in this particular cloud, is that it is going to be fairly limited impact rather than pervasive impact. It's hard to say that to an individual who loses a meal being delivered to their home, or the family of a child who needs special services, no longer getting those services. At the macro level, in the aggregate, it is going to be diffuse.
So as kind of an easy Cliff Notes version for people that are listening to this and maybe just joining us here in the broadcast, you know, how would you rate the overall level of pain for our region that this sequester will bring? I mean, even just compared to the recession, you know, do you think it's going to be barely noticeable, severe, or somewhere in between?
Probably the pain is going to be more talked about than felt, mm-hmm. because in the grand scheme of things, we're looking for less than 6% cut. And the specific individuals and families it impacts, of course, as I said earlier, will feel it. But the rest of us, we will more read and hear about it than feel it. In the grand scheme of things, in the macro analysis, any kind of sequestration decision is actually bad policy because it's very blunt, it is not surgical, and it doesn't address the main issue of government spending. Is it effective and is it efficient? Simply cutting line items doesn't fix the structural problem. It doesn't fix the efficiency and effectiveness. Is this particular investment doing what it's supposed to be doing? Could something else be done differently, better? And are we wasting money? These are the bigger questions. If we dealt with any one of our big line items and tried to make it more efficient, we would reach a savings of 5% very easily. Here we are toying with 2.5%, 3% savings over 10 years in a very blunt way, where we need very precise surgical instruments, we're using something bigger than a baseball bat.
I was speaking with somebody locally here the other day, and we were talking about just the impacts of yet another government gridlocked standstill and what that's going to do to people's perceptions of how things in Washington are happening, specifically in such a red region that we live in here on the shore. What do you think sequestration is going to impact the way, or how it's going to impact the way people look at government and politicians as a whole?
I hear the very same things you're hearing, and I look at it a little bit differently. I think we are trying to find the culprit in the wrong place. We're looking at Washington and blaming Washington, whereas what we do here in our ballot boxes and in our engagement in the local, state, federal politics is just as much to blame as what they do there. In the final analysis, we are sending these people there collectively. And if we don't like what is happening or what they're doing, we need to let them know. We need to, if they don't listen to us, take the appropriate actions to change who's there. Until we become better engaged, until we become better informed, it's not going to change, because the only solution left at that point is wait every time for the next election.
You know, as far as the economy of this region, you know, we mentioned earlier that this region always kind of lags behind what's happening, both, you know, when it's going down the drain or whether it's recovering a bit. So, you know, as our economy has improved, many people in this region have still been feeling the effects of the recession that, you know, many metropolitan areas have already kind of moved past. What do you think sequestration is going to do as far as that impacting that recovery from people just starting to feel like they're getting back into the black, economically speaking, will it set many businesses locally here, you know, back several months, even a year?
At Beacon, we looked at this, and we looked at our peers elsewhere in the Mid-Atlantic region looking at it, and we have held conference calls and conversations about this. And we tend to be on the optimistic side of the spectrum here. We have one of our counterparts across the Bay Bridge on the western side of it who believes the impact is going to be as high as 1.6% hit on the regional domestic product. We believe it's going to be less than 0.5% over the next 18 months. In other words, we might not see the needle move much in the first 6 months, but the following 12 months, there might be a little drop of less than 0.5% in our regional domestic product. Gross regional product. What that means is if nothing changes in our economy, we will have delayed our recovery a little bit. But because the trends have been positive and increasingly positive, we're hoping some of that less than 0.5% is going to be absorbed. Obviously, anytime you have something like a crosswind or headwind, it's going to slow you down. But because we have a little bit of momentum going for us, we might be able to weather it.
We've been speaking with Dr. Memo Dierker. He's the founding director of the Business, Economic, and Community Outreach Network, or Beacon, at Salisbury University. Memo, always nice to talk to you, and thanks for being here on Coastal Connection.
My pleasure.
We move now from the economy to the environment. Sea level rise is, of course, a big concern for all of us, but especially for those of us who live on the coast. In the next 100 years, some scientists believe that water levels could rise as high as 2 feet, which would put some parts of our coastal community completely underwater. And even though those are long-term projections, we know that during big storms, like during Sandy or the one that hit our region earlier this week, when we endure prolonged rainfall and accompaniment of whipping winds, there's only so many places for that water to go. And thusly, flooding is an unfortunate but a growing part of our lives here on the coast. But if you're worried that your local municipality is going to do nothing about sea level rise until it's too late, kind of like how politicians dealt with the sequester, for instance, don't be too cynical. Because a new committee has been formed by the Maryland Municipal League to tackle that very subject. What to do about sea level rise in the state of Maryland? Ocean City Councilman Dennis Dare has been named to that committee, and I talked with him earlier this week over a cup of coffee.
The state of Maryland has like 400 structures that are within the zone, the flood zone, if you will, that could be impacted by sea level rise over the next 100 years. And there's over 400 miles of roadway within that area as well. And the purpose is to look and see, you know, what actions can be taken now and procedures put in place to plan for that. I think that Ocean City has faced that somewhat 30 years ago, back in the 70s, 40 years ago, with creating a building standards that are higher and more stringent than FEMA. So we've already constructed most of the buildings in this town 2 feet above the FEMA levels, and this is one of the things that the executive order applies, that, you know, we may want to start exceeding what FEMA has on their flood maps.
Anybody I've spoken with within the town of Ocean City, that's what they say the first thing when you breach the subject of sea level rise, is that the town is well ahead of what's already required, you know, by the federal government. But as this conversation continues, and we've all seen those dramatic pictures of what the coastline looks like now and what they predict the coastline, our very neighborhoods, our place where we live, is going to look in 50, 100 years. What steps do you think that this committee is going to take on the short term to get the ball rolling?
Well, it's not only going to be the state facility, it's also going to be facilities that the state invests in. And I'll give you an example, again, in Ocean City, is the convention center. The original convention center, the first floor is built basically at FEMA's elevation. And when we expanded the convention center 10 years or so ago, the exhibit hall, you'll note you either have to go up steps or up a ramp to get to it because it's 2 feet higher. And so we've expanded the existing facility and we had state involvement in it, but we brought it up to the city standard of being 2 feet higher. And I think that as the state and its investments are made, these are the type of things that the committee is going to be searching out. And, you know, whether it becomes a mandate for everybody else, it'll at least become an example.
There's been this ongoing argument nationwide about taxpayer dollars being used to fortify coastlines. And as these storms, such as Superstorm Sandy or even Irene or some of the storms that we've seen in recent years, seem to get stronger and stronger and come on a yearly basis, what do you say to that argument?
I know the argument. And again, I think Ocean City's been a good example of how to do it. We designed a beach replenishment that incorporates sea level rise in it, guarantees 50 years of maintenance with the federal government and the state and the county and the city. And so we've protected billions of dollars of infrastructure here and millions of dollars of taxes to all four levels of the government. In the last 30, 40 years since the federal flood insurance program began, I think Ocean City's had like $5 million in claims. They collect $7 to $8 million a year in flood premiums from Ocean City. So it's not the coastal resorts necessarily that are impacting the flood insurance. It's the riverine communities, mm-hmm. the people that are built along rivers and see the flooding come and then go back and rebuild along the river again.
I've read a number of articles that say that sea level rise and climate change is not just a coastal problem. This impacts metropolitan areas all over this region, Baltimore, D.C., Philadelphia. You know, something like 85% of the nation's population lives close to a coastline of some sort. Talk about that and how much plays into what's going to be talked about in this committee.
If you think about it, all the major cities in this country were located along water because it was a means of transportation in those past centuries. Still is today, with 85% of the country's population being in those coastal communities, you know, they're all going to be faced with issues from sea level rise as far as elevation goes. So it may be you're in part of the county that's not affected by the, you know, the 8 inches or 10 inches of, but maybe a school is, and you're going to have to help pay for rebuilding the school perhaps, you know, at a higher elevation. This isn't happening overnight. I think in the 25 years that beach replenishment has been in effect, I think we've seen it like 2 inches as change in the sea level rise. It was something that has well over a foot built into it. There's elevate, there's retreat, but it's not something that's going to happen in the next decade. I mean, we're talking about 100 years. They give 30-year mortgages for houses. And I don't know, you know, probably the life expectancy of a house anymore is probably in that 70, 80-year range or something like that. So there's plenty of time. Hopefully what comes out of this task force is some good planning on how to approach it at this point in time.
That was Ocean City Councilman Dennis Dare talking with me about a new committee he's been named to that will plan for the potential impacts of sea level rise in our state. To learn more, click to our website, wamucoast.org. I'm Brian Russo, and you're listening to Coastal Connection.